Even though this summer has been cool, cloudy, and rainy in many parts of the state, Alaskans and visitors are still out enjoying the majesty of Alaska's iconic mountains, rivers, lakes, and coastal vistas, often by using one of the many local, state, or federal trails that crisscross Alaska. A lot of federal money is aimed at boosting access to more wilderness areas. We'll discuss the plans for cabins, campsites, and trails today on Talk of Alaska.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by
ConocoPhillips Alaska, building the next generation of Alaska's workforce through investments in education and vocational training to provide jobs right here at home. ConocoPhillips Alaska. Invasive plants and animals threaten Alaska's environment and economy and can spread to new locations by hitching a ride. Anyone can help prevent the spread of invasive species by remembering to play clean go, removing all plants, animals, and mud from boots, gear, and vehicles before entering and leaving recreational areas will help stop invasive species in their tracks. Learn more at playcleango.org. This message sponsored by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters.
Hello, it's Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend. Many people have moved to Alaska, at least in part, because they love the outdoors. Drawn by the appeal of hunting, fishing, camping, and wilderness trekking in places hundreds of miles away from another person. During the pandemic, it was a panacea for stressed out Alaskans who wanted fresh air and lots of distance from other people. Many other Americans didn't have the same options, and I remember being very grateful for our easy access to wild places pretty much from any doorstep in the state. Even in Alaska's largest city, you can escape within minutes. The hunger for more access is being fed by a big infusion of federal cash into parks, trails, cabins, and more. We've got experts on hand to discuss what's being built and improved this summer and what's on the horizon for upgrades for the next few years. Wendy Sailors is the Community Engagement Manager for Alaska State Parks. Steve Cleary is the Executive Director of Alaska Trails, and both are in the studio with me today. And James King is the Director of Recreation, Lands, and Minerals for the U.S. Forest Service and joins us on the line from Juneau, and he does that service for the Alaska region. Welcome, all of you.
Thanks for having us, Lori. It's
glad
great to be here.
Thank you.
Thanks for...
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, thanks, all of you. This is going to be a good, fun conversation. You can also join us. Are new trails or cabins being built in your area, or do you wish that there were? Do you have a favorite trail or campground you'd like others to know about? Don't keep it a secret. Where do you think investment should be made to improve wilderness access for Alaskans and visitors? You can call us statewide at 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-8255. If you're in Anchorage, the local number is 550-8422-907-550-8422. You can also email talk@alaskapublic.org. Okay, let's get started here. Steve, your organization, Alaska Trails, is involved in a lot of trail work in South Central this summer. How many projects do you have going right now?
Well, that's a great question, Lori. We have three paid trail crews fanning out as far as Cordova, where one of them is based for the summer. And then we have another one working in conjunction with the U.S. Forest Service currently on the Johnson Pass Trail. And then the Chugach Park Fund has funded us to work on a state parks trail out the South Fork of Eagle River. And then right here in town, we're working with Youth Employment and Parks, who are not far from here today near Abbott Loop Community Park. And then we've got tons of volunteer events going on. Last one was out at Aklutna Lake, and we'll be all over mostly Chugach State Park this summer. But we're really excited to have all that going on the ground while at the same time planning for the Alaska Long Trail, our effort to connect trails all the way from Seward to Fairbanks. So we're jazzed about trails, even with this somewhat rainy summer that you mentioned. We're super excited and really excited to be here today to talk more about it.
Yeah, a lot going on, and we'll kind of drill down in some of those areas that you mentioned. How unusual is it to have this much funding coming from so many areas for trails?
Well, I think it's unique right now, and we're trying to do our best to facilitate that. We're a small organization, so for instance, for our Long Trail project, we work with lots of partners, like the ones your other guests here today, but also partners like the Denali Borough, who got some federal funding, over $2 million, to work on some more great trails in their area. So for us, the key is partnerships, finding those professional trail builders, boroughs, municipalities, the state, obviously, and federal government, but a lot of partners can build a lot of different dots, and then we'll work to connect those dots together. So the more oars in the water, the faster and better these trails are going to be.
James, you're with the U.S. Forest Service. There is a lot of money in the infrastructure bill for recreation. You noted $14 million, mostly for cabins. How many and where will they be built? Has that been decided yet?
So we are in the process of figuring all that out. So yes, with the bill, we got that $14 million. One of the exciting things, as Steve was talking about, is partnerships. We instantly entered into a partnership with the National Forest Foundation, which is bringing an additional $3.7 million to that pot of money. And so we reached out to the public and did a survey, an interactive survey, and asked both our staff and the public, where do you think we ought to build new cabins? And what should those cabins look like? What are the features that people like? And we got a tremendous response, over 1,800 responses. And from that, we started to narrow it down. And one of the things we learned was people wanted cabins closer to communities, a relatively short few miles up a trail, or a relatively short boat ride to a place in protected waters. And some even wanted cabins in campgrounds that are very accessible to the letter of the law. Somebody could push a wheelchair up into it, and all of the amenities would be there. So we went back to the drawing board and kind of figured out where it made sense to spread those out across the two forests, the Tongass and the Chugach. And we have come up with 25 locations. And some of those locations, we're still working very hard on the analysis, looking at the impacts to the environment, to heritage, what the soil types are like, what the impacts to other users might be. And others we've narrowed down that were kind of already being thought about and planned for. So coming in 2024, we have six new cabins being built, two up on the Chugach and four down on the Tongass. Mm-hmm. So we're pretty excited to be moving forward with that. And then each year thereafter, for a few years, we'll be building seven or eight new cabins.
All right. What a great way to start off here by knowing that more cabins are coming. Wendy, are there similar projects in the work for state parks this summer?
Actually, not this summer as much as we're planning for next summer. We do have some groundbreaking going on this summer, but we got a small pocket of money from the legislature. And we asked for $2.4 million. We got $1.2 million. It's going to bring us about eight cabins. And so we're planning for eight cabins right now. And we already have a contractor in place, and they're starting in Kasugi-Ken. So we have two in Kasugi-Ken, which is one of our most popular destinations. We run 85-90% year-round there, so having two more cabins there is going to be a great addition. And then we have three going in the Chugach. We have Bird Creek Campground getting one, Eagle River Campground getting two, also Johnson Lake on the Kenai, and then in the Chena River State Recreation Area, we have two cabins going in as well.
You work with state park needs across the entire state. How do you prioritize them? What goes into that?
It's actually pretty hard to an extent, just because I live here in the Chugach. I live and play in Chugach and Matsu, so it's easy for me to get information and my own data from being out in the wilderness on my own. I do try to get out as much as possible and travel as much as possible, mostly on my own dime. I love being a tourist in my own state that I was born and raised in. And my favorite area is Southeast Alaska. So I do build really good relationships with the staff in all the regions, and I work closely with all the superintendents, field staff, and rangers. And some of them are really great at giving me information, giving me social media posts, giving me any information that needs to go out to the public, updates on websites, et cetera. But some of them I have to reach out to. So I attend superintendent meetings on a weekly basis, you know, and I stay in touch with all the staff either by email or phone, and I'm reaching out to those on a regular basis.
If you're just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska, and today we're talking about investments in Alaska's trail system and cabins and other recreational areas. There's a lot of federal money coming into the state, and we're talking about plans for the future of being able to access the wilderness here. 1-800-478-8255 is the number statewide if you'd like to join our conversation. 1-800-478-8255. In Anchorage, the local number is 907-550-8422. 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. We have in the studio today Steve Cleary, who is the Executive Director of Alaska Trails, and Wendy Sailors, who is the Community Engagement Manager for the Alaska State Park System. On the line from Juneau is James King, Director of Recreation, Lands, and Minerals for the U.S. Forest Service Alaska Region. Wendy, sticking with you for a moment, it's great to be thinking about new cabins and new trails, but there's about $90 million in deferred maintenance. Where are some of the biggest needs, and is there money aimed at that as well?
The needs are really across the state, and a lot of times emergent needs change the order of how things go, right? So we have a budget of about $14 million in operating, and that includes very basic maintenance and sanitation at all of our trailheads and parking lots. So when we're looking for funding for maintenance, we have to go outside for that and seek grant support or funding support in other ways, partnerships. We rely heavily on all of our partners and our volunteers for that reason as well. So Alaska Trails, Chugach Park Fund in the Chugach, but we have Trail Mix in Southeast, and we have the Folk School in the Northern Region, and folks all over the state that really partner with us to help bring that to fruition. It's our design and construction team that also looks for funding for the projects that we have. Some funding, unfortunately, doesn't cover deferred maintenance, so we try to stay away from that term as much as possible.
Oops.
It's okay. So yes, we do have a lot of maintenance that we need to catch up on, and so priorities change over the course of time. This year, as an example, we had a priority in Delta Junction where a historic property is getting really close to the riverbank, and so other projects on the Kenai got put aside so that we could focus more on that. And it really just has to do with our limited staff resources and time.
Sure. And as you said, when something goes from just needing work to an emergency, then you might have to reprioritize things. Staying with you for just a moment, Wendy, as we know, there's been hiring challenges in so many job sectors. How does law enforcement work in the park system? And do you have enough staff for it? Are you having challenges there?
We are having challenges, actually. We are down 6 ranger staff out of 22 positions right now. We have had a hard time finding qualified staff that, quite honestly, know how to fill out an application appropriately. We have like just specific directions, and it's not that hard, but it is very intricate when you apply on Workplace Alaska. I will say that. But there are specific directions that have to be followed to a T, and we are unable to move forward with a candidate if they don't do that. So that's one little obstacle that we have. But also the biggest obstacle is that our law enforcement officers do not make nearly the money that a state trooper does. Mm. If somebody loves the outdoors and they want to serve the public and they love parks, then it's definitely the job for them. So a lot of times what we end up getting are staff that think that they want to do that and that they can manage that financially, and then something happens. They have a baby, they realize their family's getting bigger, they need more money, so they decide to be a trooper. With rangers, they get to be about 50% law enforcement, 50% parks. I mean, I'm just throwing out numbers based on my observation. So So it is a different kind of position where there is more time outside and more time face to face with people enjoying them as opposed to arresting them, I would say.
Well, that's good.
Right? So if somebody's looking for that, we do have 6 positions open right now, and they're actually on Workplace Alaska.
All right. So there you are. If you're looking for a job where you get to work outdoors and see people having a great time out in the wilderness, but follow the instructions,
yes,
right?
Please.
You got to be able to fill that description, that job description out, or application out. Steve, let's talk about the big project, the Alaska Long Trail, that aims to connect Seward to Fairbanks. Where is that project currently?
Well, that's a good question, Lori. We've had generated a lot of excitement. As I mentioned, we were working in collaboration with a lot of other groups all along the length of that trail to get good projects built. And there's a lot of trails, Johnson Pass Trail, as I mentioned, or others that already exist, particularly along the Iditarod National Historic Trail. But we've received great support from the legislature recently and from Senator Murkowski shepherding bills through the U.S. Senate as well to get a lot of funding for great projects all along it. And so what I like to say is that there's a lot of great projects that are great dots that would be good in and of themselves. But when we connect those dots, they come together as a bigger whole. So to answer your question more directly, many of the key missing segments, particularly between Anchorage and Seward, some of which are being worked on this summer, and many of which will be filled next summer. And people can check out our website for a database of up-to-date information on the Long Trail. And actually, kind of going off of what you were asking Wendy about, one of the win-wins that we see with the Alaska Long Trail is knocking down that deferred maintenance, or helping out particularly state parks with maintenance. And so, for instance, we've gotten in the last 2 legislative sessions, $4.2 million in 2022, and then a little over $1 million in 2023. But those are for projects like Crow Pass, Klutna Lake, Indian Valley, that are on that list of deferred maintenance for Chugach State Park and other state parks around the state or along that corridor. So we really see that as a win-win, taking care of that maintenance and then getting it ready to be part of the Alaska Long Trail.
Oh, wow. So you're kind of getting double duty out of the funds to make both connections and to improve the existing trail.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
What's not to love about that?
Steve, you owe me $5 for every time you say deferred maintenance.
Okay, sounds good.
Priority projects.
I got a 20 in my pocket, so yes, I'm writing
Excellent.
That down. Priority
so far,
projects. 20
is all...
Could be illegal to be saying this on air. I'm not sure. For all of you, we heard about, of course, a big surge of visits to parks and trails during the pandemic. Do you see that trend continuing? Are people staying at that level? Is it continuing to climb, or... What's been the reality now that the pandemic has subsided? Wendy?
I'll take that, sure. So we definitely saw the spike in 2020, and then it stayed steady, ever so slightly went up with our public use cabins in 2021, and now it's pretty much staying flat is what we're seeing.
Hmm. Yeah. James, how about on the federal side?
Yeah, you know, one of the interesting things, we get a lot of visitors to the National Forest. And as the pandemic hit, our use numbers kind of went up a little bit, which meant a significant number of locals started going and filled in that gap where the visitors used to be. So, and that is continuing. We're seeing a continued growth in use of cabins, trails, campgrounds, picnic facilities, all of those facilities.
Well, that's good. It's great I'm a big proponent of people getting outside and getting into the woods, into the trees. There's something about that connection that's really good for all of us. I have no doubt about that. Let's go to the phones for a moment. Michael is in Sitka. Hello.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. Did you have a question?
No, I just had a comment. I'm here to put in a plug for the development of water trails for kayaks and other human-powered watercraft.
Water trails. All right. Talk more about that.
So, you know, Southeast Alaska is the most amazing kayaking destination I've ever been to, and I've guided and traveled all over the world for kayaking. And there are a number of places around the world, including in the lower 48, where there are actually developed water trails for human-powered beachable watercraft. They're really simple. They're super cheap to make. Obviously, there's no maintenance on the trail, no erosion. The campsites are very simple. It might be as simple, like there's up in Prince William Sound, there are a couple that are just, you know, fake wood platforms with a couple of eye bolts in them to hold tents down and a bear hang and a pit toilet. And, you know, for Southeast, it's an awesome option for cheaply developing access to wilderness. Additionally, like I have a number of friends who are paraplegic who are avid paddlers down in the lower 48, but there's not really anything to, you know, for them to be addressed. Now, you know, like Seven Fathom Cabin works all right for them, but, you know, to have more specifically designated sites for kayakers or canoeists or, you know, other human-powered watercraft, I think is a great way to go.
Well, thank you for that idea and putting that out there. I want to turn to our trail experts now and get some feedback from them. Steve?
Well, years ago, thanks for the call, Michael. Years ago, we worked with the Kachemak Bay Water Trail Alliance to set up something like that in Kachemak Bay, which, of course, is another beautiful, smaller part of the state than all of Southeast. But we worked with in partnership with the U.S. Forest Service recently on a Tonga Sustainable Trail strategy. And growing out of that, Sitka Trail Works and others are in conversation with us right now, trying to figure out some sea trails and trying to figure out how to do just that, because there's a lot of trail access, obviously, on the water, but then that could lead to trails on the land as well, and cabins and other great sites. And it seems like a win-win for everybody and a great investment for the state to make. And so I know that State Parks has, you know, Nancy Lakes and the Swanson River Trail, you know, some smaller ones that are more probably analogous to ones that connect lakes, for instance, in the lower 48. But I think it's a great idea. And as you said, no erosion, easy maintenance, that kind of thing seems to be a really positive part of it.
And also making wilderness areas more accessible for folks, as he said, that right. have mobility challenges. Wendy and James, when you're building trails both on water or on land, there's got to be a lot of crossing between state and federal land. How do you coordinate those projects? Because the permitting must be different. And then how does private land sometimes get involved? I heard a really good story just this morning on NPR about trail building in upstate New York and how there's a big coalition of both state managers and private landowners that are working together to make access into areas that people wouldn't otherwise be able to see.
James?
So, sure, I'll take that one. We actually have a project in Sitka, Stargavin, where we're rebuilding a trail. We got some money from the state Fish and Game to help with that. It's at Stargavin, and so the way we're dealing with that particular one is through an easement on state land. But it's, you know, that's always an important and a somewhat tricky situation, because our purchasing laws are different than the state's purchasing laws, and easements and all of that sort of add up to some paperwork. But it is pretty neat. We do work where we can closely with the state to make those connections, because generally the public doesn't care which agency it's on. They just want to have a great experience outdoors.
Yeah. Wendy?
So true. And a lot of times they don't know what public land they're
right.
on, quite honestly. So James brought up a very great topic that we could talk about probably forever, and a whole like hour-long topic or an hour-long podcast. Easements and access, especially when we're talking about different land managers. So like you mentioned, private, public, and different agencies. So the main thing that I was thinking about while James was talking is how we often mention our volunteers and our partners, but we don't really talk a lot about how we partner. And within federal and state, but also just within agencies, there's a lot of partnering. So as an example, within Department of Natural Resources, where Division of Parks and Outdoor Recreation is held, we also partner very closely with DMLW because they handle easements. So when we're talking about even, say, the Long Trail, and in some of the segments of the trail that they're putting in, we're crossing over into different pieces of land where a lot of easements will be required. And easements equal time, for lack of a better way of saying it. Sometimes a little bit of money, but really it's time. And DMLW deals with that on a very DMLW? Regular basis. Division of Mining, Land, and
okay,
Water. I'm so
you.
Sorry. Yeah.
All right. Let's go back to the phones for just a moment before we get to a break in today's program about the future of wilderness access, trails, cabins, campsites, and all the fun places to visit in Alaska's vast wilderness. Let's go to Stu, who is in Muldoon. Hey, Stu.
Hey, Lori. Thanks for taking the call. Yeah, I'm a little scratching my head here, guys. I'm active up in the Nancy Lake Stick Rec area there, and boy, they could use some more funding for manpower there with the park. We got, you know, like especially the cabins at Red Shirt Lake, you know, one of them's got a leaky roof, broken windows, things like that. You know, it's nice to build a brand new shiny thing, but it'd be great if we could keep the ones up and running. And even the Park Service, you know, they traditionally have been working with volunteers to get trash out of the park, and they just don't have the manpower to do it. I know they worked on the trails up there recently, and they're doing a good job with that, but I think we might want to look again and see how we can keep the places that we do have up and running instead of just building new stuff everywhere, which always makes people happy, but when you can't maintain what you got, it's kind of frustrating. That's all I'll say. But thanks for your hard work, everyone.
All right. Thanks for the call, Stu. Did you want to follow up there, Wendy?
I would love to. Thank you, Stu. Actually, we have asked for money from the legislature for maintenance specifically. And this year they chose to have us build new cabins, thinking that would bring in revenue that would help us cover some of that. That was the thinking behind that. But we did ask for that, just so you know, and that is on our mind as well. I actually gathered information from all of the superintendents, and we have a list of maintenance that needs to happen in the cabins throughout the state.
All right. Yeah.
And Steve. This is Steve with Alaska Trails. So we have volunteer events that people can check out on our website. And that's, you know, filling a bit of the gap, but not everything. But there was money, for instance, for Chugach State Park and a trail crew in the operating budget, which got vetoed this year. And so we're hoping to work with partners to get similar funding like that, to have the state invest in maintenance like Stu was talking about, to maintain things while we're hopefully generating more revenue, like Wendy said, but also building new trails. And so I think it's a both answer. We're hoping to be able to keep and maintain the great assets that we have while investing in new and more fun trails.
Are you able to still get enough people volunteering to help to do the kinds of projects that you're hoping to do? Volunteerism has really tapered off in a lot of areas, which is troubling because that's how a lot of small communities stay operating and functioning, is through a lot of volunteers. I imagine the same is true for a lot of the work that you're doing. How is that?
You know, I'd say it's going pretty well. It would be easy to say that the weather hasn't helped too much, but we've got a really good group of dedicated volunteers who have taken the time to get training so that they can lead other volunteers. And so it's starting to really pan out. We've got a super volunteer down in Whittier, and everybody loves to go there for the barbecue that he throws afterwards, and people just get a tradition of it. So we're trying to keep growing that sustainably, but every time we have new people coming out, and so we're always looking for more volunteers. So check out those upcoming events. But yeah, it's going pretty well. But it's one part of a many tools that we use with our partners, both state parks and Forest Service. So we're excited about volunteers.
All right, we are going to continue our discussion about trails, campsites, cabins, and what the future is going to look like in that respect as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Quality childcare creates futures for families, children, and the state's economy. When children are safe, engaged, and learning, parents can work and everyone has a better outcome. THREAD has resources to support your family in their childcare search. Knowing what to look for in a licensed facility is important for the safety of your children. THREAD also offers parenting resources and support. To learn more about quality childcare in Alaska, visit threadalaska.org. This message sponsored by THREAD.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We're talking about investment in Alaska's trail system, campgrounds, cabins today with Steve Cleary, Executive Director of Alaska Trails, Wendy Saylors, Community Engagement Manager for the Alaska State Park System, and on the line from Juneau, James King is the Director of Recreation, Lands, and Minerals for the U.S. Forest Service Alaska Region. You can join our conversation if you have a question or a comment. Statewide, the number is 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-8255. If you're in Anchorage, the local number is 907-550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org, as Frankie did. Frankie says, remember, so many of us are loving winter trails. Will agency funding ever provide monetary support for the concept that trail grooming is actually maintenance?
Well, that's a great question. I'll try first, since I'm not a land manager and I won't ultimately be responsible for it.
You don't have to wade into controversy.
Yes, exactly.
Here.
I'll put in a plug for, you know, all the great groups around the state, starting here in town with the Nordic Ski Association of Anchorage. But, you know, there's Tall Teshi Trails, there's groups down in Homer, Talkeetna, that, you know, groom trails, Willow Trails Committee, you know, and all the mushers grooming trails for their use as well. So just winter, so long and so fun up here, that that grooming is super important. And I know the state has a small but important snow track program that provides for grooming every year. But I think it's a real testament to small groups, including single track advocates. The mountain bikers here in town have a small groomer to groom their trails for the winter. So I think it's a real getting out in winter, as you mentioned earlier, Lori, is just an important health aspect, both mental and physical, for Alaskans. And so it's winter, great time, and great time for grooming.
There was a period of time during the past winter when often the trails would be in really beautiful shape, the streets, not so much. Let's go back to the phones. Deb is in Kodiak. Hello.
Good morning. Well, I'm going to continue on this winter access to our park system here in Kodiak. A couple of years ago, we had a pretty good snowfall, and the particularly Buskin Beach was pretty much inaccessible to vehicle, and so there was no plowing. So that is, I'm just extending on this comment about winter access and who makes the decision, who's responsible for the funding, and how can we make it available for all of us to just continue our love of nature and our beautiful surroundings. So I'll leave it to that. I'm really enjoying the program today. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for the call, Deb.
I'd be happy to.
Yeah, please, Wendy.
So thanks, Deb. I appreciate you addressing that. I remember that in Kodiak, as a matter of fact. And now would be a good time to first of all say that we were happy to hand the SnowTrack program over to DOT this year. So we do not manage that anymore. We also partner with DOT quite a bit throughout the state. Hatcher Pass would be a great example, where we don't manage the roads often. We don't have the equipment or the staff for that, so we have to partner with DOT in many ways. And I'm pretty sure that the Buskin situation was one of those, but also it was a matter of, I think, a broken piece of equipment, unfortunately, or something along those lines. But also a lot of snow and them just using the little equipment they have to get to where they can. So really, it's a partnership with DOT a lot and managing that. But also, we are asking for some more money for equipment. So we might be able to, at some point, have a few more, like, medium plow trucks in different areas. But I'm not really sure, to be honest with you. I just know that we are asking for that. But that's a great question, and that's something that would be a good discussion that we could have with the different communities, for sure. But it's a lot of times a partnership between us and DOT.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the basics. Steve, the actual building of trails, what does it take to coordinate workers and tools? And then how do you figure out a design for it to make sure that you don't create erosion or other types of problems for the local environment? I mean, I think about some of the trails that are really steep and think it's challenging for someone hiking. What's it like lugging tools up to a place like that?
Sure. That's often one of the hardest parts about a volunteer event is if you have to hike 2 or 3 miles with a tool in each hand that can stretch into a long hike. But I think the South Fork of Eagle River project out in Eagle River in Chugach State Park is a good example of this. And so that's funded by the Chugach Park Fund, who's done such a super job of getting a Rasmussen grant, matching that, and then putting it all together. But we hired a retired Chugach State Park trail expert, Blaine Smith, to do the layout and design, which took quite a bit of time because it's like any big job, building a house, building a road. It takes time, and you need to invest in figuring out what the plan will be. But we've used helicopters to get the materials in because it has gone from a series of broken boards through a wetland to now an actual boardwalk and a sustainable trail. So part of it is, we'll be putting in a better slope, a mellower angle, so that people can hike better, and then also a boardwalk and other areas to get it out of the wet area. So there's quite a few aspects to it, but putting in that initial investment for design is really important. And Chugach State Park is very helpful with that to make sure that it's following their trail management plans and to make sure that the public is involved to put in their 2 cents as well.
When, for people who are just maybe starting out, just getting started with hiking and outdoor adventures, or people who have physical challenges, maybe older folks, where, Steve, would you recommend they go to get good maps and good guidance about what to do, how to be prepared, what kind of gear to take with you?
That's a great question. Both of the partners here have good websites to direct people to where they can go, and especially if they have mobility challenges. And that's certainly an increasing aspect of what trail managers are looking for. At the Government Peak Recreation Area, other trails around the state are more accessible, especially here in Anchorage. The Anchorage Park Foundation has made a definite point of that. But it's always important to be prepared. You can get lots of advice from lots of people about what to bring. But of course, as we all know from this summer, the weather is the biggest thing to plan for, and wildlife as well. And so there's a lot of great groups out there that meet up and go together on trails, which is also a great great intro to trails as well. And I'll put in a plug for Kasugi Ken as well, Wendy was talking about earlier. I spent the 4th of July there, and that place really has something for everybody. There's big hookups if you have a big RV. There's walk-in tent sites. There's a trail right from the campground. There's cabins. And the Matsu Trails and Parks Foundation is building a connector from there to the Kasugi Ridge Trail. So that'll be roughly a 50-mile wilderness trail for people to hike. I know many of the listeners have probably hiked Kasugi Ridge before, and this is an extension to it. So the Kasugi Ken area is a really beautiful gem right in the center of the state.
And Wendy, the old Kasilof Landing is slated for work in Kenai. What's going to be going on there?
That actually had to be put off due to the Delta project that I spoke of earlier. But there's going to be basically a parking lot put in there and a new boat launch. Those are the main things.
Okay. Yeah. Where does funding come from for state trails as opposed to federal trail work? Is it all from the legislature, or does a lot of it come from income that's made from visitors?
So honestly, a lot of it comes from, I think I mentioned this earlier, but recap, our budget mostly covers basic maintenance and sanitation of trailheads and a little bit of trails. But really, we look for funding from outside resources and grants. So we manage two different grants, actually three. The National Historic Preservation Fund, LWCF, which is Land and Water Conservation Fund, and then also RTP, Recreational Trails Program. So that those we apply for grants through those programs as well, for trails mostly, and sometimes parking lots, as well as construction in the area or toilets to be maintained or updated. That's not like a glorious project, I guess, but those are, that's definitely something that we are doing a lot
important
of right now is, yeah, is replacing toilets. But also we recently, I guess some money came through that we share, that's basic for deferred maintenance. That's, we're working with other agencies on, so we get little pieces of it here and there, but like there's a couple projects like the Nancy Lake area is going to see some of that in the next year or so.
And you said in an earlier interview that there's a lot of money shuffling between and within government agencies. Tell us a little bit about that and how that affects how you fund projects.
Well, example would be that federal agencies give us the money, like the land water conservation money. So it comes from the feds, and then they have rules around that too. So a lot of times it's a time-consuming project. Same with the Historic Preservation Fund. That comes from federal money. So we have to follow their rules, which sometimes can be can take a lot more time. And so people get frustrated with the timeliness of the process. I would say that that's the way that it affects us the most.
And a group like Alaska Trails, for instance, we have applied for and received quite a few recreational trails program grants that that Wendy mentioned. And so, for instance, that's funding or will fund work at some Russian Jack mountain bike trails that the Youth Employment and Parks started on this summer, but we'll be able to finish those next summer through a recreational trails program grant. And lots of other small groups around the state apply for recreational trails program grants to build and maintain trails.
And they benefit us.
Yeah.
So it's sort of a circuitous way of of running money through the system. but we appreciate it.
All right, we are going to take another short break. When we come back, we'll continue with calls, questions, and discussion about Alaska's trail systems and what the future will hold as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
What gives you strength? Strength comes from teaching the Alaskan way of life, getting wood, fishing, hunting, helping people in the community, and being an example for the next generation. If you have forgotten your strength, remember, there's hope, there's joy, there's love, there's peace everywhere. Share what gives you strength at recoveralaska.org/share-your-strength. This message sponsored by Recover Alaska.
One of the greatest honors for a public media station is delivering on its promise to provide quality programming and news you can trust to the communities it serves. What you hear on air is the result of a dedicated team working together to bring you the best. It's a privilege to be a part of your day. Thank you for listening, for your feedback, and for your support.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We're discussing investment in Alaska's trail system today with Steve Cleary, Executive Director of Alaska Trails, Wendy Sailors, the Community Engagement Manager for the Alaska State Park System, and James King, the Director of Recreation Lands and Minerals for the U.S. Forest Service Alaska Region. Let's go back to the phones for a moment. Glenn is in the Tongass National Park.
Hi, Glenn. There. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
Hey, I really like the trail systems and the campsites and all of that, but comment by a caller about
water trails was really intriguing to me, and I'd really like to see on the Tonga, since I live near Thorne Bay, some more access for people that use canoes and kayaks. Kind of a raised trail, if you will, on the Thorne would be perfect, so that it isn't such a thrash to get my kayak or canoe down there. And really large, big rocks, and you know, you got to drag it down slope. It's kind of hard on things. Plus, I'm not getting any younger. I was just, I know they spend a lot of money on boat ramps, and it seems like they spend as much money on the engineering as they do actually doing it. But it would be really great if it wasn't always connected to, things for fishing, like sport fishing, but could be also be attached to things like trails. And we don't need much, but just some way to get our kayak cart that could hold our canoe or our kayak or our float, our rubber raft, if you will, but nothing huge, just better access to these rivers here at Southeast so we could float them, because they're beautiful.
All right. Well, thank you, Glenn. I saw Steve taking notes there. And, you know, that kind of leads me to a question of how do you think about when it gets to be too much? Like, you don't want to overbuild places. You want people to have reasonable access. But there has to be some sweet spot, right, about when you're creating access, but also not doing so much that you're changing the local scenery and putting too much structure in place in wild areas.
Well, I'm happy to talk more about that, but I'm going to pitch it to James first to talk directly about Southeast and some of those comments from the caller.
Yeah, James.
That'd be great. So Glenn and Michael really appreciated the comments about water access. That is an important way to move around Southeast in human-powered boats. I really encourage both of you and others to participate in the upcoming forest plan update. That'll be starting next year for the Tongass, and it's a major effort. Through those public meetings and public planning processes, please participate in that. And it's through that process that we get the public input and we try to find that balance that you were talking about. How do you accommodate use in a way that doesn't detract from what it is you are trying to provide an opportunity for? I wanted to share just a couple other thoughts around maintenance. One of the earlier callers talked about maintenance. And one of the exciting things within the Forest Service, both with the bipartisan infrastructure law, we did get money, and we're rebuilding 10 of our existing cabins, or doing a major upgrade to a refresh, if you will. But the other thing that I think is exciting around maintenance is the Great America Outdoors Act that passed in 2020. So for the Forest Service in our region, we are receiving over the five-year period nearly $60 million to go towards deferred maintenance. Mm. And it's been exciting to watch those projects roll out. We've done some really big ones, for example, and are still working on them, the Russian River Campground. We're rebuilding the access road where it was all slumping down the hill. We've been rebuilding the campsites so that people could get in and out of them better. Fixing up the walkway will come down by the river. The Mendenhall here in Juneau, where we've been put a new roof on the visitor center. We're fixing the heating. We're fixing the parking. And across the region, I just took a quick look. We have 63 trail projects across the region that are part so far of this Great America Outdoors Act. And roughly a third of the money is going towards those trail projects. And again, those are deferred maintenance, fixing up what we've got. So that Great America Outdoors Act has been a really exciting opportunity to get out there and fix up what we got. We all know that one of the big challenges is it rains a lot around here and things erode and rot. And this is giving us an opportunity to really catch up on those.
James, I had a question by, or we had a question by email. There's scant information here, so you might not be able to answer it, but I'll just put it to you anyway. Matt writes in and says, I am a resident of Petersburg and Ketchikan. During a recent trip to a U.S. Forest Service cabin, I found a flyer from a public group that stated, the way the public uses cabins has changed. And then he asks, can you elaborate on this? Is there anything afoot that people should
elaborate.
Know about?
I can elaborate on that a little bit.
Okay.
One of the interesting trends that's changed in Southeast Alaska particularly, but also up on the Chugach, it used to be relatively inexpensive to fly to remote cabins, fly out to a lake or a river by float plane. And so many of our early cabins were focused around that. We have a lot of cabins out on a lonely lake somewhere. As the price of aviation and fuel and insurance and other things has gone up, it's gotten quite expensive to fly out to cabins. It could be cheaper to fly to San Diego than it is to fly out to a cabin. So that's changed our use of those cabins. And that's part of why we've heard from the public, we want to see more cabins closer to the communities. Now, that flyer I think you're talking about, there's a wonderful group of dedicated folks that own planes that like to fly out to those cabins. And they're helping us maintain those cabins and giving us information, giving us a report back when they've been out there and something's happened that needs major repair. And they have concern about those cabins, again, because the use has gone down so much. Mm-hmm. And they worry about that. So I think that's what the flyer is getting at. And as an agency, there's always that wrestle of, okay, if a facility starts to lose its use, at some point, do you get rid of it? And the answer is always hard there, because it doesn't matter how few of people are using a facility, there's always somebody who loves it dearly.
Sure.
And so those are hard decisions. And for the most part, we haven't taken cabins out. But I think that's what that flyer was getting at.
I see. And the other side of that, we had an email from someone who is asking about overuse. William says, is there such a thing as overuse of a popular area? In Homer in the summer, we get literally hundreds of mostly tourists taking water taxis and private boats across Kachemak Bay to visit our state park. And he goes on to say, the state of Alaska doesn't seem to have an opinion when I've asked. So in your opinion, do some areas get too much use? Are we only looking at the money factor and the more the better? Are most visitors seeking a more private viewing of a beautiful area and its wildlife? And he asks, is our wildlife being pushed back in more and more areas? How much is too much? Steve.
I think that's a good observation and kind of a potentially never-ending question, different opinions all across the way. But what we've tried to do, particularly with our partner, Chugach State Park, is try to spread that use out, not having everybody go to Flat Top or the sunny side of Flat Top, but highlighting the other great trails that are around. And I think the sort of earlier question you mentioned, like how much is too much, I think a good example of that is Crow Pass. And so through the leadership of folks like Senator Willikowski, Chugach State Park received $1.5 million to improve the Crow Pass Trail. And I was fortunate enough to be able to run the Crow Pass Crossing this last Saturday, so I can testify to the fact that the trail does need some improvements. And it's a rough bushwhack in a lot of areas, but Healthy Futures, who runs the race very well, and other folks, they don't want it to be paved. And so there has to be that balance of how do you figure out what everybody wants, because everybody doesn't want the same thing. And so we want to get people out on trails, and we want to be a good caretaker and a good steward of the environment and those trails. but we also don't want it to be overrun or overused to such a point that then it creates its own maintenance trouble.
Absolutely. And do you think that with the advent, we talked at various points during this hour about access for all people, so that folks that have physical limitations can access areas or may have other challenges. Do you think that with the advent of better options and lower prices for renewable energy, that solar panels or wind generators may be installed in some areas for convenience at cabins and maybe a safety feature? Is that something that's being considered at all? Or is that not something you want to entertain? People should just...
Well, I can't say that it's not being discussed, but we're definitely not close to it as far as solar panels go. For starters, we don't have electricity at any of our cabins except for one at Kasugi Can. So electricity isn't even like an option at any of our cabins. Right. They're definitely very like rough.
Just dry cabins.
Dry cabins, right. Exactly.
Yeah. James, how about on the federal side?
Yeah, we're in a very similar place where most of our cabins are dry cabins. There is no electricity. One of the challenges, particularly here in Southeast, is solar panels, for example, are just difficult because we have so many dark gray days that don't produce much. But we do have, now that we're starting to put a few cabins in campgrounds, some of our campgrounds have electricity. And we're having that discussion now. Gosh, do we put a light in the cabin? Do we, instead of using firewood and a wood stove, do we actually put a heat pump in the cabin to heat it? That's a very, very different experience than what we've provided in the past, where it's a, as you said, a dry cabin that has a wood stove or an oil stove in it. Somewhere quite a ways off the road system. So it's certainly an item we are discussing at this point. But again, that demand for facilities that are more accessible for those people who can't physically hike up a trail is growing, and we're recognizing that and trying to help meet that demand.
And along that same line, the advent of more electric bikes on the trails. I see more of them. I'm on the trails every night. I see more folks on electric bikes and even regular bikes flying along on the trails. On the one hand, it does allow more people with mobility issues to get out and enjoy parks. But when you have multiple users on foot, with dogs, small kids, other bicycles, are you seeing increasing conflicts or concerns over injuries? And do you think that at some point there might have to be other ways of dealing with this? I guess we're out of time, but is it a problem currently?
I don't think it's a problem currently. I generally, my pat answer is that trail users of all types need to be polite, follow the rules of etiquette. And so you could be a jerk on an e-bike, you could be a jerk on a regular bike, but don't be a jerk.
Don't be a jerk. Don't be a jerk. That's the way we'll end the show today. Please, don't be a jerk. Share the trails. Have a good time out there. And be respectful of all users. Thanks so much to my guest today, Steve Cleary, Executive Director of Alaska Trails, Wendy Saylors, Community Engagement Manager for the Alaska State Park System, and James King, Director of Recreation, Lands, and Minerals for the U.S. Forest Service Alaska Region. Thanks to our engineer, Chris Hyde, our producer, Madeline Rose, and on the phones today, Maria Koop helped us out. I'm Lori Townsend. We'll be back next week. Thanks for listening.
Talk of Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.